out by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
The Southern California Thoroughbred Racing Circuit returns to Los Alamitos with opening day set for Friday, September 16th. Four stakes races highlight the meet led by the Los Alamitos Special on Saturday, September 24th. The meet will feature a stakes every Saturday and Sunday afternoon. And racing fans, the meet will also feature an on-track live money handicapping contest on Saturday, September 24th. You could win a berth to the 2022 NHC. And racing fans, the best of night racing continues at Los Alamitos every Saturday and Sunday night. Outstanding racing action is in store this weekend with stakes trials highlighting the racing card. Plus, our nighttime $2 pick six continues to be a popular wager. If there's not a carryover going into our Sunday night program, Los Alamitos will add $10,000 to the pick six pool. That's more money for the horse players to win. The best of racing, the best of nighttime quarter horse racing, always at Los Alamitos. Remember, daytime thoroughbred racing returns on Friday, September 16th.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life has National Crop Sires, Divining Rod by Tappan, and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full-service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two, and I obviously will be able to do Churchill tomorrow with Scully and Scott Shapiro, which is good because it's a very nice, I only looked at the second half of the card, really, starting with race six, and there's a $120,000 maiden special that is interesting. Got to do some pedigree work, and this means I'm going to have to bring the printer with me. I've been dragging this thing all over North America. And then the Seneca overnight, field of seven, including Turner Luce, who you'll remember upsetting the Rachel Alexandra, speaking of nice owners, the Thrashes, Don and Ike Thrash. And they were so excited. That was great. With Brad Cox, it was there that day. Ben Colbrook's got Valentina Day, Falconette. In here, the Uncle Mo filly coming out of the Iowa Oaks, where she was a good second to Butterbean. She was a good second, but she did go favored at a short number. Cocktail Moments in here. Kenny McPeak is bringing out all the heavy artillery. And here's Phil Bauer again with the Alabama Exeter Scratch Cat 63 caliber for Amos and my racehorse and Spendthrift. And this happens to be interesting because if you listened the last week when Gary Contessa stopped by at the end of the show and we were talking about, you know, some of the things that Gary was doing at the sale, and that included, you know, some of the work with for Lee Pacoy, and this is 63 caliber, the Gunrunner filly out of that nice class of 63 that has really sold well among Lee Pacoy's Lee and Kathy, speaking of long-term owners, for the broodmare band that that Lee has assembled. Conaher got mentioned earlier with Paul McGee. Conaher shows up for the Tomlinsons and Patricia's Hope and Mark Farrar. The Harrods Creek, this is the 7/8 stake for $275,000. And Conaher and Gunite are the principals in here. There's also Strava for Dallas. McPeak's got a second time North America that we saw at Saratoga, that editorial comment that didn't fare so well trying the turf sprint. This is an Argentinian mare. This is an interesting question. This is a Southern Hemisphere 3-year-old, which makes this one younger than everybody else. So this is a 3-year-old exclusive. So, right? That would make that August. Yeah. This is a horse that's giving away significant age to everybody else. They were all born in, let's see, April, February, April, April, February, February. And editorial comment was born in August. So, yeah, basically 6 months, up to 6 months worth of experience and physical aging. Then there's the Dogwood, and Echo Zulu makes her long-awaited return. There were plenty of people who were convinced we would never see her again. Oh, they'll retire her. No. Here she is for Lee Levinson and Ron Winchell, the Gunrunner filly, who actually ran very credibly, despite all the issues, ran a good enough fourth, beaten three lengths in the Kentucky Oaks. Chasing Fireflies for John Ortiz. Who's nice. Colorful Mischief for Todd, trying stakes for the first time. To Robbie, here's another horse that, kind of been a little kind of incomplete year so far for Cherie. Gunning for McPeak as well for Grandview. And Eddie Keneally takes one over from Ron Spatz. Last Leaf and Wicked Halo out of the Prioress win for Steve Asmussen. Really good Dogwood. And then the Bourbon Trail, as mentioned, with Paul McGee. Let's turn our attention to Tony Black standing by and getting excited for Saturday's action at Parks.
How can you not be excited for Saturday's action at Parks? You're going to be there, and you couldn't have, without even inviting me, I was going to be there. So I was going to buy you breakfast. But now that I know you invited me, you couldn't hold me from the place. And you know, when it comes to Ron Winchell, and you had just mentioned his name, Ron, you know I always root for Ron because of the connection I had with his dad, Vernon Winchell. So go get him, Ron. See if you can win another stake someplace else. But, yeah, it looks like the Derby came up a good field. You know, you got horses in there like Zandon and Taiba and Cyberknife. Can't leave them horses out. Are going to be tough. Haven't really looked at the Cotillion, but it's going to be a good race. And we'll do some serious handicapping to figure out who the big horses are in that race tomorrow.
All right. You got to get me some answers, and we'll get them out there. We'll get some Tony Black opinions.
Well, and you know one thing I've always admitted when it comes to handicapping, if I'd ever sat on their back, my handicapping was really mediocre at best. But if I sat on their back and rode them even in the morning, not even in a race, I did have a better opinion than my handicapping opinion. But I'll try to step that up, my handicapping prowess tonight, and see if I can, like, move it up to a level where it's not disgraceful for being a jock that rode all the years I rode. You know?
You now have provoked. We'll talk about what's going on Saturday in a minute, a little bit more, and some Pennsylvania Derby type history. But who's the best over the years that you rode against? Who's the best jockey handicapper? And it's okay if it's somebody that you know like to bet. I mean not necessarily on themselves in races, but that you on an off one day name, and you guys were hanging around betting.
One name that really comes to mind, and he's a guy that he would lay his paper out on the valet's number table, and he'd have more marks on that paper, and some of them had nothing to do with racing. It was just his personal way of handicapping, and the name that comes to mind is Bill Hardtack. He was amazing, but he used to handicap pure on past performances and all that, and then he brought astrology into the whole aspect
astrology.
Of handicapping, and he was an astrology fanatic. And I said, wait a minute, it's tough enough to handicap these races, Bill, when you're just looking at a horse's past performance. But then you bring astrology into it, and that has to do with the rider and when he was born and all these different figures you come up with. And his, you could, when you would look at his form, he had more red and black marks all over that form. Well, what's the red would stand for? And I think he would tell me something like, oh, those are the astrological numbers I come up with. And the black marks was the handicap. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. You couldn't even understand the form because it was all his personal marks and everything. But he would sit there for hours, you know. And then I always wondered, I said, well, do you bet on any of these? And once in a while. What do you mean, once in a while you do all that work? He says, oh, it's just good. It's just fun to pick winners. Just knowing that I pick the winners is important. You know, whether it's not the betting, it's the picking them. You know, it was had a big ego. The guy was unbelievable. And I rode with him. And it was near the end of his career before he went to China, you know, and we were in Maryland. And he was an amazing guy to be around, not just as a jockey, but as a jockey, handicapper, astrologer. You know, he might even come up to you one day and say, today's not a good day for you. Well, what are you talking about, Bill? He says, well, that's the way the stars align or whatever aligns.
This is so crazy.
It was amazing. He was an amazing guy to be around. You know, I know the press didn't understand him, but everybody in the jocks room understood him because he was such a personality that was unique. It was not a personality that you might ever meet with in any one you touch base with in your life. He had a unique personality. He was a great guy to be in the jocks room with. And I had some stories to tell. He even took part in some of the jocks room antics, like we would pull a brakeman's daughter on a kid. And he would like set the kid up. You know, we're going to this house to meet these girls tonight. Boy, you're definitely in. And then the kid would knock on the door, and Bill would be standing behind him, and you'd have some guy come to the door yelling, "What the hell are you doing here? You coming to see my wife, Jason?" And the guy would cool out, open the door with a shotgun, and he would blast. And of course, before the shotgun went off, Bill with the kid, "Let's get out of here!" And the kid would be running for his life, and then the guy would blast the shotgun. Bam, bam, and Bill would say, I'm hit, come back and get me, I'm hit, and kid would keep running. I'll never forget, we did that to a couple kids, but Stuart Indig was the one that we did it to. It was the funniest, and he actually got to the police station, called the cops.
Oh, my Bill God, was, you've Bill, never, Bill you, would, you've told this, Bill you've take, told.
Bill would take part in some of those
oh,
antics,
my God.
You know, jocks room antics, you know. So he never felt like, just because he won the Preakness 5 times, that he was too important to take part in jocks room antics. He loved it.
That is great. You've told versions of this and Brakeman's daughter, but not you haven't. I don't think I've heard you mention something reaching, you know, a precinct, a jock going to the cops. That's unbelievable.
He was definitely one that would partake in any of the jocks room antics. He was just a regular guy that win a lot of races, and you never, you know, he was the kind of guy, if you thought you never met him and knew who he was, you'd think, hey, just some Charlestown rider coming up here for the day. You know, he never had an air of someone who was like so super special or won Derbies and Preaknesses. You know, he was just another guy in the jocks room, had fun. you know.
I just got the greatest text from Chad Schexnader down in New Orleans, and he says, Tony, all true about Hardtack. He was a different kind of handicapper when he was stewarding at Fairgrounds. He showed me and little Gary, meaning Gary Palmisano, who we talked to last week, quite a few tricks, and he bet every weekend at the OPA, at the OTB in Kenner after the meet when they would hang out and after the season was over.
I'm a real fan of Bill. You know, he had a unique personality that was probably misunderstood, not so much by jockeys, but by the press. It was misunderstood, you know, and wasn't maybe one of those guys that thrived on getting interviewed, one of those guys that liked being in the limelight or whatever. He was just one of those regular guys that if you knew him, you didn't have a negative opinion about him. And sometimes, you know, you meet people that had interviews with him and stuff. And said, man, he was a tough guy to interview. Jesus, man, you know, he was hard guy to deal with. He was the neatest guy you ever want to be around in the jocks room. He was just another jock that crossed his reins and put a leg on each side, just like everybody else that rode horses.
I love it. I love it. Tony, let's kick around a little bit more about Saturday, and looking forward, of course, to seeing you and Kylie. It should be really a fantastic afternoon, and Parks puts on an amazing show. I'll broadcast from there tomorrow. You know, I didn't know if you wanted to come out tomorrow, but you know, certainly welcome if you're in the mood.
Yeah, believe me, I'm going to definitely make it tomorrow. Saturday's up in the air. Tomorrow I'll
be really?
Out.
Oh, really?
All right.
I want to see you then, no matter what.
Looking forward to getting out there. New look.
Hold on. Here it comes. Let me pull it up. This could be... Oh, wow.
Now
look at you.
You'll realize I only really have a face for radio. You know what I mean?
Well, I got it.
It's lucky we're not doing TV tomorrow.
I don't know. You look like this is a new look for you. This is Professor Black.
This is Professor Black.
You absolutely look professorial. No doubt about it.
I had someone tell me that just saw that. They said, man, it's been since the 80s and late 80s that we've seen you growing a beard. What gave you the idea to do this now? I said, I didn't feel like shaving for 3 weeks. That's all. I said, I might shave it off. I don't know. But my son keeps little Pete. He trims up for me because I can't see good in the mirror when I'm trying to get underneath my neck, and he trims it. And I told him, I says, Pete, let's just take it off, huh? He says, no, Dad, I like it. So that's my only incentive to keep it on. Pete, my 14-year-old Pete, says, keep it on, Dad. I said, all right.
You know, I'm. This is very. It's. What does Kylie think? What's her opinion?
I hate it.
I love
that's
it.
Why I'm going to. Maybe that's why I'm going to keep it. That's maybe why I'm going to keep it on.
Well, the action. You know what? Now
he's gonna
if you are going to.
Hey, when you're there tomorrow, you know, one thing about it, you'll be there till what, 12, doing the show? And where are you doing it from? Are you doing it from the first floor, second floor, paddock, clubhouse area?
That,
or what?
I don't know yet. I'm not sure yet. Rich Romano is helping, and he's taking care of it. I'm going to meet him in the morning, and... He's got a couple of things in mind, you know, because it's when you come to casinos, it's funny, when you come to casinos, it can be a little tricky because the internet service is restricted. It's always blocked. All the portals are blocked. So they have to specifically open. So it's always been when you go to certain hotels, it's that way too, you know, they've got firewalls and things. So Rich is going to work on it today, apparently. And now that I know you're going to come and we'll have Chris as well, of course, Chris Griffith. And we've got, I think, Tom Law is hanging out.
How about
and,
Jeff?
Some of the
is,
other...
Jeff Maddie gonna, is Jeff Maddie going to be there? Did you happen to know?
I can't tell
he's the president of the PTHA, or the Horsemen's Group. He's the managing director of the Horsemen's Group. Good guy to interview, too.
That'd be great. That would be great. I'm looking forward to it. Have not, with all the times we've come, this will be the first time we've done the show from Parks.
Yeah. I didn't know if you were going to do it from the casino side or the racetrack side. I thought they might set you up in by the first floor dining and clubhouse. There's an area where you still have a view of the racetrack and one of the rooms right. that Kylie's in, too. Maybe they'll set you up in there, and there's plenty of room in there. But I thought Rich probably figured it out. He knows what he's doing. He'll put you where you're in a good spot. And I don't think you'll have any problem when it comes to a Wi-Fi hookup or anything like that.
It'll be
all taken care of. And then if you're going to eat there, you know Kylie's going to make sure that we got to make sure Kylie makes sure you get the best of everything, and then you know, and it'll be comped.
Thank you, Tony. You know, don't have to worry about them. I'm just happy to be there. And looking at this card, for those that haven't dug in yet, we're going to be hard pressed. I mean, to you know, give everything the attention it needs. I mean, the Derby and the Cotillion, they're literally the tip of this iceberg. The Gallant Bob has drawn 14, and I'm assuming, you know, everybody is intended to run the Grade 3.
Yeah.
There's the Turf Monster, drew a maximum of 12 as well. The Greenwood Cup, the mile-and-a-half event, that's got a nine-pack where you would think that Pletcher figures tough with Fearless. But I got to tell you, Uriah St. Louis, how well do you know him and this Dexter Haddock, who really feels underrated as a rider? I mean, he's come to Monmouth, he's come to New York, and has successfully won. You know, this is forewarned, but Uriah St. Louis has made a habit of winning big races at long prices.
Yeah, you know what? He's one of those trainers, and Dexter Haddock, one of those riders that's totally overlooked at many a time. Now, I've watched Dexter ride. He rides a good race. I remember when he started, and he started out slow, you know, and then you see him shipping around, and he's winning races at different racetracks, different venues, and he's finally looks like he's coming into his own where he's getting better mounts, which, you know, winners build winners. And a kid's riding nothing but 21 shots, you're not going to see how much he really knows about being a jockey because he's trailing the field. But when he starts riding live horses and he's putting himself in a strategically competitive position and he's doing the right thing and he wins races, you start to notice, you think, man, where's this kid been hiding? You know, he does a good job. But Uriah has been in the business, you know, as an owner-trainer, you know, for a long time. I never had much business or any business with him. He was the kind of guy I didn't really like my riding. And, you know, people like chocolate and vanilla ice cream. You know, not everybody likes chocolate. But he has come up with some good horses, and he spotted them around. He's not afraid to ship them. And he comes up winning some of these races that, you know, he's totally overlooked in. So, you know, you got to really weigh and measure his horses. He does a good job training. He does the same thing everybody else does. He gallops them, he jogs them, and he breezes them. You know, there's no big secret at times to training a racehorse. The big secret is doing what you do with him at the right time. You know, so you bring him to the race not just fit, but full of energy and fit. It's one thing you can get them fit, but you've totally depleted their athletic energy for the day they need it at the day of the performance. And there's another thing where you get them totally fit, and you've also put them on edge to where they're going to have utilize their energy efficiently and utilize it when called upon effectively. So, you know, that's the secret of training horses, getting a horse to utilize himself efficiently and effectively when called upon. And he's done a good job with some of these horses. I mean, he ships in different places. And guess what? They win. And most of the time they're a price because he's totally overlooked.
At this point, it isn't flukish. I mean, but starting with Discreet Lover 5 years ago or so, you know, won the Jockey Club Gold Cup. Adventist actually won this race, the Greenwood Cup, and then Informative, who over the last couple of years has won a bunch of stakes and has placed in other spots, won the Island this summer. And Forewarned, let me see, how old is he now? he's got to be 7 years old. Yeah, he's a flat seven, out yeah. 7 years old.
Yeah, and that's a testament to what a trainer does with his horses that gives them longevity. You know, when they make it to be seven, because, you know, you either have a horse that you have no other aspirations of doing anything else with them, like breeding them or, you know, mare or stud, but you've kept them as race horses, but you've also kept them as competitive race horses, horses that can perform at a high level as they did, you know, they're seven, and when they were three and four, they're still competing at that same basic level. You know, there's still a lot of horse left, and that's where a trainer... It really tells, you know, what kind of a horseman that trainer is, you know, that he can keep an elder statesman horse still running and being competitive. You know, it takes a lot when it comes to judging a horseman and their changing of age. You know, 2-year-old to 3-year-old, they change tremendously. 3-year-old to 4-year-old, they change a little more. And by the time they're 5, they've matured and they've really, you know, especially with mares, fillies and mares, you know, they've matured and they've become the total package. And so many a times you don't see those horses when they are totally matured and the total package is visible because they're putting into other parts of the game, you know, the breeding end of the game. But, you know, it's interesting when you see a guy like Uriah and, you know, he has access to horses, but doesn't go to sales and spend hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, he has a moderate bankroll. He does a good job. And, you know, it's not unusual to see one of his horses running years down the road.
And I'm just looking at, I'm looking at this race, and you do have the winner from last year, that Magic Michael of Ness's, and you know, dealing with having to, you know, make decisions about the Ness horses is not easy.
Yeah.
But one thing I'm noticing, there is, for a mile and a half event, there is a lot of horses involved here that want to be on and near the lead. And well, Pletcher, you know, Fearless can sit a little bit behind the speed, but the Reds, we talked to Safi Joseph on Tuesday about his horses. He's got Skippy Longstocking in the feature too, in the Derby. Schausberg shows up with that New York bred that won the Albany for Clear Stars. Boss Making Boss Moves. Johnny is down to ride and has got plenty of action on Saturday. Velasquez, and he actually has cross-entered this horse in New York too. So we'll see if Shaz is going to come down for the Greenwood Cup. But he's a horse that would be past mid-pack and come with a run. It's an interesting group for the Greenwood Cup. I hadn't really, you know, I was focused on the Cotillion and the Gallant Bob and the Derby.
You know, when you look at a race like that and you say it's a mile and a half, there's a lot of speed horses in there, that is a jockey's race, really. If you ever want to think that a jockey can make the difference, a jockey can make a tremendous difference in a race like that, and it'll be made in the first 3/8 of a mile of the race. You know, because a lot of times riders get to looking at multiple speed horses and, oh, Jesus Christ, I'm going to sit in a strategic position. I'm not going to get tied up into some speed duel. And it's a mile and a half. I have plenty of time to get there. That's all BS a lot of times. You don't have plenty of time to get there. You know, a lot of times the mile and a half races or mile and a quarter races, mile and a half especially, are won by the jock that was most aggressive leaving there and that put them horse right into the race or in front, and has won many of mile and a half races won by a speed horse, you know.
Absolutely.
Because you know, and people, they want to lay on the distance and let it over strategize their jockey thinking, and jockeys will sit there and say, oh, don't want to get tied up into this speed, it's a mile and a half, we got a lot of time to get there, we'll come running, we'll come closing. You don't. You know, time you get to the head of the stretch where you had plenty of time to get there, well, they had plenty of time on the front end to already be there, and you can't catch them.
Well, this is, Tony, this all gets to your line. In fact, you've now, to your credit, I hear other people, Rich Migliori always lays it for you on TV, right?
The not how fast you're going. You're running fast.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's how you're running fast. It's not how fast you're going. It's how you're running fast. And well, that's what you can do in a mile and a half. You know, you can walk the dog, and everybody's sitting there thinking, oh, boy, there's multiple speed horses in this race. And you know what? The one that was aggressive and went out of there and made it a pace that he was comfortable with, not what you thought it was going to be, sometimes that's the one that wins.
I'm just pulling up. I wanted to pull up the time form. Here's time forms. Pace projector, and actually they've got it as a neutral. I'm surprised a little bit that they're showing it as just a neutral pace with Double the Heart identified as a leader, and then only one other horse identified, actually two, Riding with Biden also identified as a leader, second, and then Fearless is mid-pack. The Reds is called a tracker, so there's at least four that have something of an interest. So
you
not necessarily as not as much pace as maybe not as much as I kind of thought.
And that's an ideal situation, because you know what you can make a horse do that's never been closer on the lead, that's just a horse that gets in a strategic position all the time. That's a horse you can warm up, you can put him on the bit. And if it's the kind of horse that you can turn on and off, a horse that's never been on the lead can be on the lead going a mile and a half and sustain that run throughout the race, because everybody else is thinking, geez, you know, we're going to sit. There's too many of the same type of horses in this race. And somebody that's usually back off of them that doesn't show speed, you warm them up, you put them on the bit, and you jack him out of there, and he's on the lead, and then you ease him back and slow him down. If it's that type of horse, so a horse that has that temperament, that you can gear up on a few strides, and you can just, without restraining them, you know, hard, gearing back down, like, whoa, daddy, and then he starts pricking his ears. By the time you get halfway around, you know, around the first turn and coming up the stretch, you got him slowed up. By the next turn, you're walking the dog. And by the time you go down the backside, you're walking the dog. Now he only has to run 3/8 of a mile through the wire. And he goes, and when you need him, he's been going along easily, and he's got, I don't want to say a fresh horse, because he's already going a mile and an eighth, you know. But after a mile and an eighth, he's still an energetic individual that has something left, and you hit the quarter pole, you go, you know, you just let him break loose. And guess what? They sometimes win the race, and they weren't even figuring. They weren't the figure speed horse in the race, but you rode him like he was one of the speed horses, because everybody on the speed horse sat there with a finger in their ear saying, oh, it's going to be too quick of a pace going this distance. I was always the one that you could almost identify as the guy that wasn't going to sit.
Yeah. Did we lose Tony? No, Case. It's not me. I guess we lost Tony. All right. Well, you know what? If Tony's going to come join us tomorrow, we will pick up everything else with him tomorrow. All right? Casey, we've got to get – timing actually was right. I don't mean to say, you know, give Tony the send-off, but he's going to come to the track tomorrow. All right? So let's turn our attention to Remington Park and Dale Day, who should be ready for us, Case. And also ahead, Dave Hill. In a little bit. So let's get to Remington, because I did want to do this. Three stakes tomorrow at Oklahoma City. All right. So we'll talk to Tony Moore tomorrow. He'll be with us, and he brings up, you know, really that's a key. That's a key element. Did you just ask me that, Case, about calling him back? I just I just sent, this is also one of the risks we run, of course. Okay, perfect. Okay, so Tony recognized that. All right, so then let's get to Dale Day instead. All right, no, we have to take a break. We have to take a break till the top of the hour. All right. I am out of whack today. I freely admit it. Yeah, that's so funny. I accidentally sent Dale his own phone number, which I've been known to do. Every so often, how often do you do that? Do you send somebody the wrong, you send somebody the wrong text? Every so often, I'll look down and I'll say, wait a minute, I sent that to, and I'm sure they think, why did Bick send me this? That'll happen, right? All right, let's turn our page. We've got Churchill tomorrow to get involved in, and obviously all the park stuff. But Remington, and we haven't had a chance to talk to Dale, so we're going to get caught up. And there he is. Dale Day joins us, the voice of Remington Park. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me. Big week at Remington Park. Oklahoma Derby week.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, we're raring to go. Our only Sunday of the season coming up. Hopefully everybody's ready to tune in for that and play along. 3 o'clock Central, so 4 o'clock Eastern start time. 8 stakes races led by the Grade 3 Oklahoma Derby, the Grade 3 Remington Park Oaks, many other solid stakes events as well. Looks like we're going to have 12 races for the program. So a couple extra multi-race wagering options for everybody. We normally start the card with a pick 5 in race 1. We'll do that, and we'll add a pick 4. So we'll have our premier pick 4 in race 2. The pinnacle pick 4 will start in race number 5. And then we'll add a pick 5 as well for everybody. So that'll start in race 8. Primetime pick 4 will begin in race 9. So layered multi-race wagers throughout the program. And should be exciting. A lot of those multi-race wagers will be all stakes. So it'll be very cool.
Well, and the card's being drawn today.
Right now, yeah. Right now, yeah.
Exactly.
They won't close until, supposed to close at 10:30 Central, 11:30 Eastern, and entries are starting to roll in. It's that last hour that seems they begin to pour in. They open the entries a lot earlier than that, but for whatever reason, everybody seems to wait until the last hour or so before they start putting their horses in.
Well, in the meantime,
Remington Green right now looks like the Remington Green's really going to fill already. There looks like there's 12 in that. So that's going to be a full field at 1 1/8. Our richest open company turf stakes of the season. So that'll be one of the main events as well.
We'll do. Obviously, tomorrow, once we've got the card set, I mean, we'll revisit because even
sure.
though. You know, Sunday. But I did want to also, in advance of that, this card tomorrow night is a hell of an appetizer.
Yeah, we used to run these races on the Derby card program, but we decided 11 stakes races was a little much for everybody. So we moved these three. They're all for Oklahoma Breds, and they're all on the turf. That's what makes it very interesting tomorrow night. You have the Remington Park Turf Sprint at 5 furlongs. It'll be early in the program. Then in race number 6, it'll be the Bob Berry Memorial, that race named after a couple of legendary sportscasters here in the Oklahoma City market
yes.
for about 60 years or so, who unfortunately both have passed on, but that race is named in their honor, father and son. And then I believe it's the last race tomorrow night, is the,
the Red,
Red
Earth
Stakes. So, again, solid program tomorrow with 3 really nice Oklahoma Red Stakes races. So that's on Friday night. So, like you said, you whet the appetite a little bit. For that, getting set for the big Sunday card and get a few stakes race events in on Friday night when the time they run primarily will be one of the few tracks running stakes races tomorrow night, I would think. So hopefully everybody will join us. Be a simulcast and account play for that nationally.
Well, no doubt. And I told everybody the pick 4 that starts with the Bob Berry and 7.5 on the turf, field of 10. Then a maiden 25, 2-year-olds going short on the dirt, 10 there, 9 in the open company allowance, 1 1/16 on the dirt, and a nicely matched field with, not surprisingly, Hem as the 5-2 favorite for Steve Asmussen and Stewie Elliott, and then that Red Earth with a field of 12, you get the sense that, you know, the 7-2 favorite tapped the dot for Asmussen and Stewie. And that's just, you know, that gives you an idea, a fairly, you know, high number as a morning line favorite. So the impression is that this is a deep competitive group. They're also going to go 7.5 on the turf. The Bob Berry is the corresponding race for fillies and mares. This one for the boys.
Exactly. And you mentioned tap the dot. There's a couple of interesting factors in here. Number one, Dude, who's a multiple stakes winner at Remington Park and Oklahoma bred a company primarily, and he's also done very well up at Will Rogers when they raced their thoroughbred season up in the spring. He right now, at age 4, I believe, he's probably the richest earning horse out there that's an Oklahoma bred. Of course, Welder retired after last year, so someone had to take the mantle, and he is at the moment at just over $300,000. But hasn't tried turf, and I'm interested to see how that's going to go. He hasn't done very well over the course of the summer racing outside of Oklahoma, so his return to the state where he seems to perform best, number one Dude, tomorrow night in that Red Earth, I'm interested to see how that's going to play out. Cowboy Mischief, looking for other options, is one that's had success on the turf at Ramage Park in the past, and also jumps up and seems to spring a bit of an upset here and there in state bred company ranks. So that's a really solid race, field of 12, in that one to wrap it up tomorrow night. So that's something, another one to watch out for. Lynn Cleverad owned and trained, and Luis Quinones will be up, won their debut here at Remington Park back over the main track, coming from just off the pace. And it's perfect over the turf. Only one start lifetime, but it was a win. So they're going to put that one back and get the drop back into Oklahoma Bred Company. So that's a very interesting race, the Red Earth tomorrow night in race 9, the finale to wrap up Friday night and the kind of the Derby weekend preview on Friday night.
Exactly. And I'm just kind of thumbing through here, looking at the figs for this group. And I just pulled up the wrong page, actually, like a dope. There we go. That's not going to help me. looking at today's card, actually. But give me a second, because I got the PPs.
So for those people that will be joining us locally, and we do get folks that come in from out of town for this day, because it's, like I said, it's one of our two biggest days. Really three, but the third one's the State Bred Day, the Oklahoma Classics in late October. But this day for Oklahoma Derby, we've had it on the final Sunday of September for over 10 years now. And for many years, it was by itself, but the good folks in Pennsylvania decided to plop the Penn Derby and Cotillion on our weekend, but that's how it rolls. The final day of the season, basically, Springboard Mile Day in December is the other big one. But we usually have folks come in from out of town, so if they're not aware of the festivities we have on track, you can let everybody know. You can dress your best if you want to do that to enter the hat and tie contest, hat and bow tie contest. Ladies, men, couples, doesn't matter. Multiple divisions, $3,000 in prize money, so you can pick up a little spending money or betting money if you want to. And it's free to enter that. It starts at 3 on the track level north, 3-hour time. Also, the Oklahoma Derby Wine Tasting Festival continues to grow, featuring Oklahoma wineries, and that will begin at 3 p.m. And for $20, which goes to charity, by the way, our Remington Park Charities benefits from that. You get the official wine tasting tumbler, not just a small glass, an actual tumbler, which is interesting. But, hey, the more wine, the merrier. And multiple tastings for that $20 from these various wineries. And that goes for 4 hours from 3 until 7, and that event continues to grow.
Very nice. Well,
so those are the on-track features for everybody that shows up on Derby Sunday.
Well, that'll make for a pretty festive atmosphere.
Usually does. It's like I said, it's become very popular. The most emails I get asking questions about what is happening at Remington Park is basically, what are the age limits to wager or go to our casino? And the other one is usually about the wine tasting festival. Where do I buy tickets? How do I get them ahead of time? And they show up and you're in. You're good to go. They're like, good. That makes it easy. So yeah, it's very. People are into the wine tasting festival, and that's cool. So there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, I can tell you a little bit of a parallel, because when Tina and I
when we ended up going to the Thousand Islands, and of course our anniversary was this past Saturday, and 11 years ago when during the summer at Saratoga, and she had discovered the topic of going to the Thousand Islands came up, actually because of Paul Barone, Gary's longtime assistant in the barn, and Paul loves to go up to the river. He had put the bug in my ear to go up to the Thousand Islands. So I told Tina. So she starts to research it, and she finds a wine festival on Hart Island at Bolt Castle. And I ended up married out of this because we. She had decided, we should go to that. All right, let's go to Thousand Islands on my mother's birthday was the 17th, and we had talked about getting married in December, and she said, we could get married while we're there. She goes, I looked it up, and there's a justice of the peace, and they'll come to the island, and they'll. So be careful with these wine festivals, folks, because.
My knowledge, we don't have a justice on standby in case the wine festival kicks in and people move up their wedding date. We did have an event, though, back in the spring. It was on our property in one of our large fields adjacent to our parking lot. And occasionally we put concerts out there. And this was a concert that unfortunately had been moved around and backed up due to the pandemic years. And it was called the Honeymoon Rock Fest was the name of it. It was a three-day festival, Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday afternoon and night. And the honeymoon angle of it was they would marry you at the concert, and they did weddings all 3 days up on stage, and they actually had some of the musicians, and most of the acts were from the late 80s through the 90s type of the 80s rock type bands in the 80s and 90s and things like that. Anyway, so they actually had some of the musicians not deputized, but legalized people they were fans of. So that was really kind of a cool thing. And I'm sure there was wine out there too, but that wasn't the primary focus. But the wine can lead to, like you said, early nuptials this year, and you better be ready
for
it.
I would not be surprised that if somewhere involved in the backstretch community, I bet you there's somebody that's got justice of the peace or some sort of the documentation, an online what do they call it when you can officiate a wedding? Right.
Well, I actually know a couple of our higher ups of management are pastors, part-time pastors at their local churches, so I would imagine they would have that ability too. But that's not a wrinkle we have right now, so you don't have to worry about it. But maybe I need to suggest that to the rest of our marketing team to see if they want to throw that in possibly for next year, which would make things very interesting on Derby Day.
It could also
turn into, I can't remember the name of the movie now, but Cameron Diaz and Ashton Kutcher, where they got married kind of unknowingly in Vegas. That movie was out probably about 20 years ago, and then the rest of the movie's about the mistake they made, but I guess it turned out all right. I think that was one of those type of Vegas.
Yes.
Well, there's been a few of those.
Well, Tina loves those. That's one of her favorite. There's the one with Amy Adams in Ireland, Leap Day. That's mm-hmm. one of her that we 27 dresses. I mean, there's like 1,000 of these that have the same that have that basic same theme that get that get massaged around somehow with the meet cute. That's another one. The holiday she loves. She watches that every time she comes across it. Of course, last night I dragged her into watching Lonesome Dove for 3 hours. The second half of Lonesome Dove. So I'm guilty too in a different direction.
I'll mention that. We'll see if we add that. It might have to increase the price a little bit, but we'll see. But the Wine Tasting Festival, big event on Sunday, and looking forward to it. The entries are filling up. The Greens is, like I said, is full. Oaks and Derby starting to fill up as well. So we can recap that a little bit more tomorrow when we actually have past performance pages to take a look at and actually talk about some of these horses once we see who's in. But, yeah, get ready for tomorrow night. It's nice. Lead into our Oklahoma Derby weekend, and we're happy everybody's going to be playing along at Remington Park. And the weather will be perfect, thankfully. We're finally starting to get away from the 90s. We started again last night at 93 degrees at 7 o'clock our time. It's usually, magically, once you get past Labor Day, we cool off. But that hasn't been the situation so much this year. But starting this weekend, it's on Derby Day, the temperature's going to be in the 80s when we start things out. So that's more than acceptable for Oklahoma. And then for the next week on, it looks like 80s and 70s. So it looks like fall, which officially arrives sometime today, is finally going to kick in. And we'll have a little more comfortable weather, at least for the first three, four, five races on the card every day.
Let's look at one other race for tomorrow. Got about 3 minutes to the top of the hour, actually. Any thoughts on this allowance, the open company eighth in here, Dale? Because there's a few things going on, and there was a horse that kind of caught my eye. It happens to be a New York bred that is made his way to... out to Oklahoma. It's Rift Valley, and he's stretching back out. He's run the occasional okay race going two turns. Rift Valley 8-1 for Ronnie Cravens in here, and he's got a little bit of a look to me, and I think he might get away on the front end.
And he doesn't seem to mind the distance. Looking at his stats, he's fared okay going, two turns. So, and Ronnie Cravens, he's been at Remington Park the last couple of years now. We affectionately call him up in the media office Red Hot Ronnie Cravens, because he tends to win his races in bunches at Remington. So if he wins one, he seems to win another one the same night. So, yeah, Rift Valley, David Cabrera, he's trying to win his, I believe it's the fifth consecutive rider title at Remington Park. He needs to get some work done, because Christian Torres, who has come in for the first time this year, he and Stuart Elliott are lighting up right now. They're in their own special race. Everybody else has still not reached the first turn. So we'll see how that goes with Cabrera tomorrow night in Rift Valley for Cravens. But yeah, I could see where that would possibly take place for sure. And that race is pick four. It's very important tomorrow. So
well, and it seems, Randello is what, also 8-1 for JR, and I mentioned Hearn, the Asmussen. What's so special about Hearn?
Steve Asmussen. That's pretty much all it takes. I mean, most Asmussen horses at Remington Park, if they're not bet as the favorite, they're second or third, usually the worst. It's very rare you see a Steve Asmussen trained horse, no matter what the past performances recently look like, go off very high, more than 4-1 or 5-1. It just doesn't happen. He's won 18 trainer titles here. He set the record. He's won over 103 races a few years ago, wins in the season. I know we're a long season at 67, but still, that's not easy to do. And he has the bullets to fire. He has a horse for almost every race on the card if he and his team choose to do so. So, and with Stuart Elliott, coming back from the St. Louis Derby, people are going to take a look at this one. Even though he did not really fire in that race, doesn't look like finishing sixth, but a tired sixth at that. But that's why Steve Asmussen has to be considered. And you mentioned the New York bred. It's interesting. We do get some other state breds creeping in, aside from the normal Oklahoma bred, Texas bred, and Kentucky breds, which are the primary group. Last night it was like our own special Louisiana bred night on Wednesday at Raymond Park. We had three Louisiana breds win in a 9-race card. So that wasn't something that happens all the time. So, yeah, don't. Just because you see an invader from out of state doesn't mean it's not going to fit, for sure.
Well, the state card tomorrow, the three Oklahoma bred stakes, and since we touched on the Berry a little bit and the Red Earth, your thoughts into the sprint in the third?
Let me back up and find that one. That's early in the card. 5-furlong turf sprint for the Remington Turf Stakes. Let's see. Well, we've got 9 in there. Rowdy Rascal trying to turf. Don't know how that's going to work out, but he's due to fire a decent race. He's way overdue. He really had a great season last year at the age of 2 here. So that's one probably to consider. Looks like he's a bomb, shortening back. Might work out the 5 horse for Ronnie Cravens again, trainer. And then another one who's not won a race over the turf, but we keep kind of waiting on it. Pomeroy Hayes, who Austin Gustafson has had now for a couple of years, ran a ton of wins off a couple of years ago here at Remington Park, and so far this year hasn't really done much, but has found the money over the turf, just hasn't found the win. So coming back in against Oklahoma Reds might be the magic elixir for that one. Last year finished 3rd in the same race. We'll see if that one can step up and improve a bit. Shannon C on the inside, another one, all speed, and Shannon C fires will be tough to beat on the turf even.
You know who intrigues me, and I don't know if we're going to get 6-1, but what's wrong with Broberg in here? Rosie's Outlaw with Christian Therese.
Nothing at all. But again, the combination's done very well, and again, another one that looks like wants to be somewhat forwardly placed and does his best running up front. Looks like just sitting off of it. So probably good call there, Steve. Probably have Shannon C first into the turn, and then Rosie the Outlaw right there, ready to pounce, waiting.
Well, and one of the things you get with this Maimonides gelding is that, coming back to Oklahoma Company. And mm-hmm. got beat in the Route 66. And did not run well, actually. But
Crossed that one off to bowl ring up there at Tulsa at 5 furlongs. Probably didn't like the tight circle there.
Exactly. So there's enough, there's enough turf form to recommend. And, it's got 4 exacta finishes with 1 win at the sprint distance. Rosie's Outlaw for me at 6-1.
Yeah, that's probably not a bad pick whatsoever. Englander beat Rosie's Outlaw last time. Englander got cooked in the speed duel last night in our allowance feature in the 8th race, and they gave it up with about a furlong to go. So Englander not a slouch, though. Neither was Newport Beach, who Rosie's Outlaw ran behind. So that could be another one to definitely consider, at the very least, if not for win, for your exotics and for your pick four play. Premier pick four.
Yeah, speaking of yesterday, too, and a quick survey. We haven't talked in several weeks, and give everybody a quick overview of what's gone on this middle portion of the meet.
Yeah, we get through the first couple of weeks, and we become the major night signal, we think, at least out in North America. And once the summer meets wrap up at Saratoga and Del Mar, we really seem to get a lot more attention because we don't have any overlap with Del Mar anymore and things of that nature. So things are going very well. I said the weather's been good. It's been a little warm, but it's been good. We only had one night where we've been off the turf and had rain to contend with. And actually, I think that was the last time it rained in Oklahoma, so we would like to have some more, but just preferably not on a race day. So things are going very well, and we're into the meat of the season now. And this week is a big one with Oklahoma Derby, and hopefully people, once they latch on to the action on Derby Day or even tomorrow night, they keep coming back.
We'll talk again with Dale tomorrow, and we'll attack Sunday's Oklahoma Derby card.
Dale, let's do it. Thanks, Steve.
You got it. Dale Day, everybody. The Dale Day on your Twitter machine. Let's take the top of the hour break. We're just at 11, and we're going to reach out to Dave Hill. We're going to get into week 3. Of course, NFL action starts tonight. So let's get Dave's thoughts after the weekend. Got beat a couple times might have gone the other way. Had a chance to maybe go 3-2 or 4-1, but went 2-3. David Hill joins us next. At the Races continues, hour 3 after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
The Southern California Thoroughbred Racing Circuit returns to Los Alamitos with opening day set for Friday, September 16th. 4 stakes races highlight the meet led by the Los Alamitos Special on Saturday, September 24th. The meet will feature stakes every Saturday and Sunday afternoon. And racing fans, the meet will also feature an on-track live money handicapping contest on Saturday, September 24th. You could win a berth to the 2022 NHC. And racing fans, the best of night racing continues at Los Alamitos every Saturday and Sunday night. Outstanding racing action is in store this weekend with stakes trials highlighting the racing card. Plus, our nighttime $2 pick six continues to be a popular wager. If there's not a carryover going into our Sunday night program, Los Alamitos will add $10,000 to the pick six pool. That's more money for the horse players to win. The best of racing, the best of nighttime quarter horse racing, always at Los Alamitos. Remember, daytime thoroughbred racing returns on Friday, September 6th.